Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a beautiful Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's always a beautiful Gulf Coast Sunday morning. But, you know, it's also a beautiful Alabama morning. And maybe it's a beautiful Mississippi morning, too. I think it is. And a beautiful Florida morning. And a beautiful Florida parishes morning over in Louisiana. And maybe even a beautiful morning over in New Orleans. It's a beautiful morning. And I'm thinking about that because we talk about this being a Gulf Coast Sunday morning on this show, and even as we're getting listeners from other parts of the state, and I think, you know, what really are our boundaries here? What do we call our boundaries on this show? And it's about marketing, I suppose, and it's about what we do with this show and about who I talk to and whether I can be useful to you or not in a certain area and give you the right advice. But, you know, it's also important for you to think about what your boundaries are. And it really is interesting. Let me give you an example. I've always been struck by the fact that, and I've noticed this for a long time, when Mobile designs its gardens, and when you get a garden designer in, and when people look at, say, this is the kind of garden that Mobile is supposed to have, or this is the kinds of things we're supposed to plant, we will decide that we have more in common with Tuscaloosa and Birmingham than we have in common with New Orleans. And New Orleans is culturally, physically, much closer than those other places. And of course, climate-wise, it's much closer to Mobile, New Orleans is, than Birmingham. And yet, so much of what we think about what we are and what we do in our gardens is based on our alignment with Birmingham. Why is that? Well, I think we let, sometimes I think we let politics, and that's an interesting thing, and the politics of state lines drive our thinking about who we are and where we are more than where we actually are, where we actually live, what we would actually benefit from. So it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting phenomenon. I'm still trying to figure it out sometimes. One of the things I'll say, and I think it's very useful, because we got a lot of listeners here who aren't from Alabama. We got a lot of listeners over in Mississippi. You know, I got to confess, folks, I was born in Mississippi. Don't hold it against me. Not too far over the state line. You know how that goes. But it was in Mississippi. Spent a lot of time growing up in Alabama. Spent a lot of time growing up in Mobile. We got listeners over in Florida, too. And it's good that they're all paying attention in a way, because they're not saying, okay, Bill's talking about Alabama. He's talking about the Gulf Coast. He's talking about the Gulf Coast because that's the area we live in. They see beyond the politics of state lines. We sometimes let, it's interesting how our identity is often driven by, even in the garden, is driven by politics rather than by who we are and where we are. Just an interesting thing to think about. I'm thinking a lot about it. We have, you know, I'm answering questions all over Alabama now, and that's really nice. And I could say it's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning, but that's not fair to what we do on this show. We think about the entire Gulf Coast. we think about all of the gardeners, where they are, and we try to understand that each of those gardeners has a different experience, and we try to honor that. And we don't try to limit it to state lines or to the politics of state identity. It's an interesting thing. I've been thinking about that. Maybe you can help me. Who is our audience? Who do we address? How do we define who we are in this state? And it's in the states surrounding us, maybe we could say, you know, I sometimes think, gosh, maybe our identity is the old identity. In the old days, Choctaw wasn't, you weren't Choctaw if you were from Alabama. You weren't Choctaw if you were from Mississippi. You were Choctaw if you were from an area of Mississippi and Alabama that included many different people with many different languages. We've forgotten the many languages and differences within the state. But maybe they spoke more to, you know, where we are and helping us to figure out how to take advantage of where we are. Just things to think about. It's a Choctaw Sunday morning. That's what Dancing Rabbit used to say to me. My once Choctaw woods, he would say. Let's talk about your garden this morning. Let's talk about what needs to be done. Let's talk about wherever you are in Alabama, wherever you are in Florida or Mississippi or Louisiana. Let's talk about what needs to happen in your garden over the next several weeks. It's a really great time for planning. It's a really great time for figuring out where you are, for really beginning to focus on that. It's, boy, there's so many great things to plant this time of year. If you're, I keep telling people, and we'll get a ton of calls from people in, probably in March or April or May, people who are on the Gulf Coast who think they must live in, say, Michigan or Ohio, thinking, I need to start working on my lawn now because all my Facebook buddies are working on their lawn in Michigan. But right now is the time to work on lawns in South Alabama, over most of Alabama. It's the time we work on lawns in Mississippi, in Florida. Let's think about that. Let's think about what needs to be done. Please, please, let's do it now. Don't ask me in spring because I'm going to have to tell you, boy, this is the worst time possible. This is the worst time possible for you to be working in your yard, for working on your lawn right now. Let's talk about planting trees. Let's talk about planting shrubs. This is the time to do it. It's the best time of year to do it. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on what you need to be planting in your garden, in your vegetable garden this time of year. There's a ton to be done. This is really, you know, I'm getting really uncomfortable telling you that you have any more time to plant peas. I mean, I think this is nearly it. This is nearly it. For people very close to the Gulf Coast, people who live a little farther north, you've got a little more time. But spring is rapidly approaching everywhere in Alabama. I mean, I can feel it already. I love these cool days. I love these chilly days are going to be great. They're great for everything. They're kind of keeping a lid on everything. They're giving us the chill hours we need. It's going to be great for all sorts of fruits. They need this little bit of chilling, but you can already tell. I can already tell that spring is just ready to break out, just as soon as these cold days subside, we're going to be seeing spring coming up on us very fast. So let's get ready for it. You ask me. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out what you need to be doing. Let's figure out where you are. Let's figure out what our boundaries are. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. We talk about what's happening in your yard. I can't tell you. I will be honest. You called me from Michigan. I can't tell you what's happening in yards in Michigan. I ain't ever gardened in Michigan. But I spent a lot of time gardening in Alabama and Mississippi and Florida. Give us a call. Let's talk about it.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain on my face. Hasn't stopped raining for days. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. You know, it's a funny thing to think about. Where you're from and how that makes you who you are. Where am I from? I haven't figured that out yet. I don't think any of the people who are in the places where I've lived would. There's enough people in those places. Just assume I wasn't from that place, which is okay. So there'd be people who'd oppose the idea that I was a Mississippian. They'd say, I don't think he ought to be a Mississippian. And there are people that say, I don't think he ought to be an Alabamian. You know, I think that's fine, too. And maybe that's how we should all be. Maybe it's okay just to say, boy, I am from the place that I understand. I'm from the place that I care about. That's where I'm from. What if that defined us? That's an interesting way to think about it, an interesting way to look at it. Because, you know, I don't think we're from any place that we don't understand. You can claim to be from Alabama, but if you can't see the land, if you can't see the place, you might understand, you might see the politics of what we are now. You might see the buildings, and you might know your way around the buildings, but if you don't understand the climate, if you don't understand the land, can you really say you're from that place? So how do we say where we're from? How do we create that identity? I'm not sure. A suggestion from Barry that maybe we could identify ourselves by climate zones, which is a great way of doing it. It's interesting if we actually knew what those climate zones were. And so Barry says, well, we're kind of 8B. Well, we're kind of not 8B. And that's one of the big things. Climate's changed to the point that we're particularly in Baldwin County, about midways down, and we're probably mostly from Fairhope down, probably that's mostly 9A. And 8B somewhat north of there. The other problem is that those climate zones really don't tell us a lot about where we are, because 8B as a climate zone also exists in California. And politics aside, people aside, cities aside, the climate in California ain't much like the climate in Baldwin County. I've been to both places. I can tell you it ain't the same. It's just not the same. So those climate zones don't really tell us a lot about where we are, because you'd have to do very different things in California to be able to live with and adapt to the landscape. So I don't know. It's an interesting question. Southern Living used to tell us we were all Southerners, but, you know, there ain't much similarity between gardening in, Northern Kentucky and Dallas, Texas, and Miami, Florida, and Mobile, and Birmingham. All of those cities are very different in terms of who they are. Their houses should be different. Their houses should be built differently, regardless of what Southern Living told us about how houses should be built. It's interesting. We should even dress differently, perhaps, in each of those places based on where we are. So it's an interesting thing. And I think identities are changing. It'll be much harder in the future to think of a unified South in the old way Southern Living did and used to promote. So we'll have to figure out our identity. But right now we're going to think about how our identity is based on where we are and where we garden and how we adapt to that and how we see the world around us. So good. Yeah, Barry, I agree. It would be great to do it in climate zones. We just need to know a whole lot more about what our climate zones are. I think the Choctaws and the Creeks and the Coasati and the Malvillians, the people who were here before us, the Alabama, the fish eaters up on the southern tip of Clark County, all of those people knew a lot more about where they were and what the climate was and what the boundaries of that climate were, I think, than we do now. They spent more time thinking about it. They weren't miraculous in that way. It's just that it's not something we think about a lot. Maybe we should think about it more. So, some questions this morning. So somebody has sent me a message, text this morning. I got my pepper and tomato seeds started. Yes, that is the thing to do. We got to get them started right now. It's one of the things about being anywhere in Alabama, certainly anywhere along the Gulf Coast. You really got to think about getting those seeds started so they'll be ready to go in the ground. Let me tell you, here's the schedule for when tomatoes and peppers need to go in the ground. And there's a big spectrum here of tomatoes. Pretty much you could treat them all the same way. I think that's fair. Peppers, there's a lot of variation in peppers, and we can talk about that. But in general, this applies for all peppers too. You want to get them started as early in the process of spring as possible. Let me define spring for us real quickly. Just help us to so we understand what spring is wherever we are. What in the world is spring? Well, there's a lot of things happening. Things begin to green up. Bulbs begin to bloom. But how do we define when spring starts? And I'm going to tell you, here's how I define when spring starts. Because it's pretty typically, this is the way it works everywhere. And I once gardened in North Carolina. Ooh, you shouldn't tell anybody that. But I did. And it was in the colder parts of North Carolina. It was around Asheville. I once had a garden there. And I can tell you a little bit about how spring works around Asheville, where it is very cold and spring starts very, very late. Oh, boy, it starts painfully late. But here's what I know. Spring generally starts about 2 weeks before, a week to 2 weeks before the last frost, the last average frost. Let's talk about what that is. The last average frost is the 50-50 date. It's the date when there's a 50% chance of another frost occurring, still ahead of you, and there it is. That's it. It's the 50-50 date. There's a 50% chance of another frost occurring. Doesn't mean it's the last frost, but it means it's the 50% date. About 2 weeks after that average last frost, the chances of another frost occurring decline significantly. And this is true almost everywhere. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, it just makes sense. So I argue that let's start spring on or about a couple of weeks before, a week or two before the last average frost. Because that's when things really begin to happen. Everywhere I've been, things happen before that last frost. You're getting a whole lot of spring development even before then. So spring begins on the Gulf Coast, and a lot of places, usually around somewhere around February 15th, February 20th. Now, I wouldn't plant my tomatoes then if my spring started, say, in Fairhope or in Midtown Mobile about February 20th. Let's say it starts February 15th. I wouldn't put my tomatoes outside then because you know there's going to be another 2 weeks where the chances of frost are pretty good. I would wait until I got to that 50% frost date. And sometime a few days after that 50% frost date, then I would plant my tomatoes. That's going to be, in Midtown Mobile, that means somewhere around between February 25th and March 5th, I would be targeting my tomatoes. Now, I wouldn't plant them outside if I knew it was going to be really cold, if I knew it was going to be unseasonable. But if it had warmed up, if the soil was warm, I'd go ahead and put them outside. I might put a little bit of protection around them. And that's really key right now, is this protection. We'll talk more about it because climate's changing and it's a little more less predictable now. And that applies for Midtown Mobile. That probably applies for Fairhope pretty well. If you're up in Citronelle, you're going to have to wait a little longer. Really, probably, I'm going to say about March 15th to March 20th. Maybe that much difference. Because Citronelle is going to get its last frost much, much later because it's so far from the Gulf Coast. Dauphin Island, let's talk about that when we get back. Hey, give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106.
With Gugutsa, I want to be. Cause Gugutsa is so crazy over me. Gugutsa grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavor.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Uh-huh. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's a morning in Florida. It's a morning in Mississippi. It's a morning all over Alabama. It's a morning in New Orleans. That's what we do here. We try to identify what gardening's like in this broader area. We're trying to figure out who we are. What are our boundaries? We're thinking about that, thinking a lot about that, figuring out how to identify what we are so that people will know we can provide advice for them. Maybe you can help me this morning. We got lots of questions. Glenna, are you still there?
I am. I'm here.
Good. Let's talk about your questions. And you're calling from Florida, right?
Yes, Molina, Florida, which is about 20 miles north of Pensacola.
Yeah, yep. Beautiful place. So you had some questions about tomato and pepper seed planting.
I do. I've never started from seed before, but you have inspired me to try because the last few years my tomatoes and peppers have not done well. So I'm going to try to do this. But I have a question. So I have bought some of those non-woven bags, and I bought a 72-cell tray, the self-watering trays that you start them in. Would I be better to put those non-woven bags and soil in those 72-cell trays instead of the coconut pellet that's in that, or do you think that's going to keep it from self-watering?
Okay, so there's a couple of things going on here, as nearly as I can tell. I think you're going to have to choose between the non-woven bags, which, if I can say briefly, is a terrible name, isn't it? To have to identify something by something it's not, which is not why I can never remember the names of them. But the non-woven bags, which I'm using, I like them a lot. They work well. And it keeps me from having to transplant a lot, and they maintain a lot of water without maintaining too much. So they're good, but I don't think you can use both the peat pots, the peat pellets, and the non-woven bags. You'll have to use one or the other.
No, what I'm saying, but can I put those bags in that tray, that plastic tray that has like 72 holes in it that's self-watering?
No, I don't think I would.
Okay.
here, there's a lot of reasons why. And the good thing about those little plastic, the little crazily named non-woven bags is that you can put them in almost anything to bottom water them. So if you had a dish that was round, you could put them in there to water them. So that's the great thing. You don't need anything too specialized to do that.
And it would soak up from the bottom like that? I wouldn't have to
It would soak up from the bottom, and that's the key. So what you're looking – so let's design you something. Let's find a – let's say you got an old
I could put them in a tote.
A tote?
Yeah. You know.
Tell me what you mean by tote.
Well, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes and depths, and you could just – something that you could just line them up in but would hold water. Doesn't have to be
right.
A real tall tote.
And I'm sure you could. And the other thing you want to do sometimes is to – it helps to keep the top – and I recommend bottom watering seeds. It makes a whole lot of sense. They will absorb the water from the bottom. You might have to, with some soil mixes, you might have to wet it from the top just a little bit, but you mostly want that water to be absorbed from the bottom. And the neat thing is you can, you know, you could actually put really warm water in the bottom, which will help to keep them warm. But one of the things that you need to do, unless you keep your house really warm, which, you know, I don't know that that's a good thing to do, but unless you keep your house really warm, you really want that soil to be about 75 to 80 degrees.
Well, I did buy some of those heat mats that you recommended.
You're all set. So now all you have to do is find a – so you're way ahead here. So all you need to do is find a simple way to both store those – to hold the plants together, to put them on bottom heat. You might have to move them around. How many different bags have you got? How many bags have you got planted total?
I haven't done any yet. I plan to do it this week because I just got my tomato seeds in. But I wanted to do it right.
So you think you might plant 24,
and then I
want
to know, do you put like two seeds per bag or, you know?
Well, so yes, let's do that. I always do that. And then sometimes if I have enough seed, just because, not because it's an efficient use of seed, because it's an efficient use of my time, I put three seeds in a bag just to make sure. And if you've got a nice big bag, there's nothing wrong with that. You'll probably have to weed out some of the seeds, but you can expect about two out of every three seeds to germinate.
Okay.
And you never know which ones are going to be bum seeds. And if the soil is not quite warm enough, you'll have other problems. But, yeah, I'd put two or three in each little non-woven grow bag with the right soil. Make sure the soil's right. Bottom water them. You got the heat. That's great. The other thing, sometimes they have these little plastic nursery trays that will hold – that they're open. They're kind of a mesh. They're a plastic mesh. And water there's nothing to hold water in them at all. But they're useful because you can put your bags in there and you can just move the bags and then put them in a watering tray or put them on top of your heat mat. You see what I'm saying? And you don't have any problems. Uh-huh. You can actually put the heat mat in that tray too. But it's easier to move if you've got a lot of seedlings. If you just have a few seedlings, you don't need to worry about it. But I think you're doing everything right.
Okay, sometimes, I have a couple more questions.
Yep.
Do you normally, if I was to start them in that 72 cell, they're awful small. Do you normally have to move them to 4-inch pots before you put them in the garden? Or just normally can you go straight from that to the garden?
You cannot go straight from that to the garden. And that's why I went ahead and that's why I've gone to the non-woven bags. If you don't have to bump them up as much. And that's the word that I inherited from my crazy nursery friends. They use the word bump up plants. And that basically means bump them up into a larger size pot. You don't want to go from a really small pot to a really large pot. That creates problems. But you do need to bump them up at regular intervals. When they're in the ground, they probably need to be in a 4-inch pot. It would be hard to imagine putting a tomato in the ground successfully without it being in a 4-inch pot, what is effectively a 4-inch pot. So that's another reason why the non-woven bags are good. Even the smaller ones have a lot of soil volume, So you might be able to go, you might be able to put your seed in there and go straight to the garden with them. But from those little peat pellets, in general, I think you'll probably need to bump them up at least once and maybe twice.
Okay. My last question. How many hours of light are they going to need today? Because where I'm going to be putting them in the house, there's not going to get sunlight. So I bought a grow light. Once they come up, how many hours of that do I need to turn on per day?
So here's the great news. Let's start here because this is important. Right now, they don't need any light at all.
Right.
All they need is heat. So you got a week or two before you have to worry about it. The nice thing is that you'll want to give them some sunlight, as much sunlight as you can. If you've got none, you'll use a grow light. But let me tell you, have you got a porch?
I do.
Is it south facing?
Yes.
Yes. You got a perfect place to put them. So what you do is put them outside during the day. Anytime the temperatures are in the 60s and the porch is warm, they'll get plenty of sunlight there, and then you can bring them in at night if the temperature gets low at night. So that's a great way to do it. So you'll be able to give them plenty of light. Right now you'll need that grow light. It sounds like through the last days of January and early days of February. But that'll help. It certainly helps if you've got any kind of light from a window. I used to put mine in a west-facing window, which isn't perfect, but they would get enough light there until the days got warm enough. And, you know, even in January, we'll get some 60 and 70-degree days. And you can put them outside on those days, and, boy, they just love it. They love it. And then you bring them back in before it gets cold. So that's one way to deal with that. Don't feel like you have to just leave them there under the light. Let them get as much sunlight as they can when you can take them outside. Does that help?
Okay. That does help. You made my husband very happy because he said that was the better way to do it anyway.
Well, I think we're both right. I mean, everybody's right. Isn't that the best way to play this? So everybody's right here. So you're right. We need to have some grow light. We need to have the grow lights because you're probably going to have some chilly days here that aren't suitable. But when the days are suitable, when it's in 60 and above, preferably 65 or above, and the porch is really warm and you got all that sunlight accumulated, you can take them out on the porch. The other thing is you could build a little small greenhouse on the porch, which let's don't make it too complicated, but you could. Make sure there's no wind blowing on those ceilings on the porch. You can even take your heating tray out on the porch because the soil temperature is probably more important than the air temperature. So you can take them out on the porch with your heating tray. Let me tell you one more thing. The little heating mat will transfer heat to the porch floor as well as it will to the seedlings. So put a piece of cardboard underneath it or something that will insulate that heat mat so that it won't transfer its heat to the porch floor. It will mostly transfer its heat to the plants above. Does that make sense?
Yes,
so put
that
a little piece
sense.
Of cardboard. Yeah, yeah. So just something insulating underneath so that it won't transfer heat to something colder, noticeably colder. So that's it. And you could put the heating mat outside, and that gives you a little bit extra time on those days when it's 60 degrees.
Okay.
How's that?
I have one question that has nothing to do with this. What type of persimmon tree would you recommend for our area?
Oh, you are so good with questions. I love your questions. Persimmons, we got great persimmons. All of the Japanese persimmons do really well. A lot of the new native persimmons are really well, do really well. My favorite persimmon of all time is Giombo, G-I-O-M-B-O, sometimes spelled G-I-O-N-B-O, Giombo. It is an incredible persimmon. It's a little finicky the first few years. So let me tell you, get a Saijo as well, S-A-I-J-O. Saijo is great to go with it. And then both of those are astringent. That means you'll have to let them get a little bit soft before you eat them, but that's no problem. Once they're soft, they are ready to eat. If you want to eat a persimmon that's not astringent, try Fuyu. F-U-Y-U. How's that?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Tell me how it goes.
I'll keep you posted.
Hey, we're going to be back, folks.
And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruttin' that Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, an Alabama Sunday morning, a Florida Sunday morning, a Mississippi Sunday morning. It's a nice place to be. I think it's Sunday morning in all those places. Look at this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful tomatoes coming up. Look at that. What am I seeing coming up in these? Who sent me this? Clay. Started in Birmingham this week using a heating pad and grow light. Seeds were left over from last year. Tomato seeds is that they do last from year to year. This is good. So you don't have to use all your tomato seeds in 1 year. They're pretty good about holding on for a year or two, maybe three, maybe four. Beautiful black, the black pearl tomato. I'm interested in that one. I'm interested in hearing how that one does. I guess you've already grown it, Clay. It's interesting. Super sweets, early girls. And they're coming up, right? Ooh, look at them. They're coming up really good. So that's a great thing. Let me tell you something, Ted. Ted got frustrated because, man, I couldn't help him. I could not tell him. I couldn't be sure who was going to have longleaf seedlings. Longleaf pine seedlings, really nice thing to have. Ted listened to me, and he knew that he needed the small seedlings. He knew he didn't need a big tree. He wanted the place to start with longleaf is small. That's always because they got a huge taproot. You just can't move them around. That's one of the virtues of longleaf is that huge taproot. And so you want the taproot to be good, and you don't want to have, and you know it's going to, there's something called J rooting where the root just looks like a J because it turns wrong, and you don't want that to happen. So you start small with longleaf, and Ted has found longleaf seedlings. Ted, let me tell you real quickly, and now you're going to be really mad at me because you went to all this trouble and you found longleaf seedlings. I'm going to tell you also, and you found them at the right time. That's good. John Olive has told me that the Mobile Botanical Gardens, that he hopes that the Mobile Botanical Gardens will have longleaf seedlings at the March plant sale, that he's actually secured those seedlings so that they will be available at the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, and that's a very fine thing. I have also requested that they consider, and it's just my request, and there's a lot of things going on. I can't guarantee it'll happen. That they consider purchasing some spruce pine seedlings, Ted. So maybe we'll be able to get that. But Ted, you got them at the right time. Plant those seedlings now. Plant them now. How should I plant them? Do not plant a longleaf seedling deep. That is very important. It is very important. They're grass seedlings. You want, if anything, Ted's got these seedlings, and the soil that the seed, that the longleaf pine seedling comes in is about, it's a little longer than my longest finger, maybe about a little longer than my palm. I'm looking for some easy reference. I don't guess I have one. But here it is. You want that to, think of that as a cork. Think of that as a long cork. And when you plant it, think about putting a cork back in a wine bottle and you know you never quite get it all the way in. That's what should happen. There's no need for that seed to be buried up to where the needles emerge. You want a little bit of that soil sticking out of the ground, like a cork you couldn't force into a wine bottle. That's all you need to do. Now, I wouldn't do a lot of digging, but you do want to, listen, here's the really important thing. Remove all of the grass competition anywhere around it. Just go ahead and remove it out 2 feet around that seedling if you can, on either side. And try to keep it that way for a little while. And you report back to me. We may do some things. Let's look at how they do. But that's fine. So just think of it as a cork that doesn't get quite stuffed all the way into the wine bottle. Leave a little bit sitting above the ground just to make sure. Okay? Doesn't have to be a lot, but just a little bit. You do not want to bury that green at all. That's when you run into problems. This time of year, I would definitely water them in if you could. A lot of times when they're planting them out in the field, they don't water them in. But I would water them in just to make sure the soil was settled. The nice thing about planting this time of year is that the rain's going to do it for you. It can help to water during dry periods in April and May. You can come back and look at them then. If you've got the water available, you'll see the benefits of watering in April and May. I think they'll probably live without it, but you can definitely get them motivated to grow and put on more growth if they don't have to struggle to find water during those April and May droughts and during the droughts in September and October, which are pretty typical for us. Ted, does that help? Glad you found it. So there it is. Clay is telling me Black Pearl is fantastic. Highly recommended. I may have to try that one. I don't remember how early it is, but it's maybe one I'd like to try. Black Cherry, I think, is a really fine little tomato. Does really well for us throughout Alabama. Black Pearl looked interesting, so we'll try that one. Let's see. Is it okay to prune a very overgrown tangle muscadine this coming week? I'd wait just a little bit, though you got a lot to work on there. Let's talk about that when we come back. We got another hour, and we will look at that and see. I'm going to study your picture, and we're going to try to. I'm glad you sent me a picture, and we're going to try to figure out what you need to do to get that muscadine back in order. I'm going to take a while to think about it because it's a mess. There's no question it's a mess. And is that on a trellis? Tell me whether it's on a trellis or whether it's on a arbor. Let me know, and let's think about that one and figure out how to do it. It looks like a good, healthy vine, though. And we ought to try to figure it out. It's probably going to take you a couple of years to get it fully back in order. So, hey, listen, I hear that music. That means I gotta stop here. We're going to take a break. We're going to have some news. That's not a break, is it? It's full-on news. And then we're back.
Sugar Magnolia, blossoms blooming. It's all empty and I don't care.